Good. So my name is Kathleen Holt, and I'm here with Wiley McFarland. The date is December 9th, 2014. We are at the Cimarron Hotel. Wiley, about a year ago, on October 18th of 2013, you conducted an oral history interview with Joyce Sullentrop. Joyce is from Wichita, but she was originally from Ingalls, Joyce Batman Sullentrop. And in that interview, we neglected to record your name and the date, which we like to have on the beginning of the interview. So you and I are going to do a little mini interview here, and we'll just kind of get some information about you, and then we can attach this to the beginning of that other interview.
That sounds like a good idea to me.
Okay, well, why don't you just start out by introducing yourself? And again, if you'll say the date, that would be good.
Yeah, today is December 9th, 2014, and Kathy caught up with me in order to get the proper introduction here. My name is William Wiley McFarland, and I go by Wiley, but my proper name is William, so when I was in the service, I was William McFarland, so that's kind of a complicated thing. But anyway, I grew up here in Cimarron, Kansas. I was born in 1928, so I've been here all my life except my time in the Navy, which was about a little over 3 years active duty. And I was in during the World War, or the Korean War time, and I enjoyed the Navy quite a bit, really. I seriously considered applying for a civilian job with them, but they didn't want to pay enough when I was available. So I came home with my folks. We live on a ranch southwest of Cimarron, and that's where I grew up, and we still have it. In fact, we got a centennial notification this year from Farm Bureau that we've been on that place over 100 years, and so it's been quite a long time. I've been around Cimarron practically all my life.
What was your birth date, Wiley?
My birthday?
What birthday? When were you born?
May 12, 1928.
Wow.
So that's getting a few miles on me now,
You may
too.
get a letter from Farm Bureau any day now.
Yeah.
Tell me just a little bit briefly. Did your parents settle there? Were you born on the ranch?
Basically so, yes. In fact, my dad was in partnership with his dad when they moved to Cimarron. And then as he got older, he married my mother in 1923. They met in the Ensign School. They were both teaching in Ensign School. And so it was just, we were on the ranch, and his folks moved to Cimarron in town, and they stayed out on the ranch, and that's where I was and where I grew up. I was there until, well, I went through high school there, and I was in college there, and when I was in the Navy, that was still my address. And then I married a girl from Fort Collins, Colorado, and we moved back, and then we were on the ranch, and my folks moved to town, so it was just kind of a pattern that followed. And there's been some ups and downs, some floods, and some real dry years. I went through the Depression and the Dust Bowl, so I've experienced that in my lifetime.
Good. Well, thank you, Wiley. I think we'll attach this to your other interview.
That sounds like a good deal. At least I've been introduced now.
Okay, we're ready. Okay, so you in the Great Lakes, first assignment, second assignment in South Bend, and you were getting ready to tell me an interesting.
The Navy has I think all services have it, but the Navy has the Armed Services, I should say. I'm killing time here, and I don't mean to.
No, that's
Armed
fine.
Services have ways of
procuring things. Mm-hmm. And the Navy does not have a facility to build ordnance, and it was basically Buell. And what was coming out and what was developed and what was manufactured at Mishawaka after I left, of course, was the Talos missile, which was fired off of submarines. But before they could do that, they went to the Navy and they said, or the Navy went to them, to Bendix Corporation, that's what it was. The Navy went to Bendix Corporation, said, to Bendix, you're a manufacturer, you know how to make things get together and put together. Now we want to build this piece of ordnance, and we want to see if you will you contract with us to do it. And Bendix says, oh sure, we'd be glad to do that, but we don't have a place to build it. It didn't like Willeron or those places, and those were all built during World War II just for that. So this one, they built them a new plant at Mishawaka. Mm-hmm. And me being in the Civil Engineer Corps, part of the Navy, the construction of the factory was involved in this deal. So that was what I was assigned to, was okay. helping with looking after the building, supposedly, to see that the Navy got what was coming their way and mm-hmm. got their money's worth out of it, which was interesting.
And how long were you there?
9 months.
9 months. Yeah. And then?
Then I went to another Industrial Reserve Ordnance plant over at Decatur, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And what that one was that the nuclear developments in World War II, they built a fancy plant over there mm-hmm. that they put in mothballs, so to speak, mm-hmm. when World War II was over. And they wanted to build a bomb for airplanes. They were to build a 500-pound, 1,000, and a 2,000-pound bomb. And they wanted to revamp that plant. They had the big shell of the plant, mm-hmm. and they were going to just rebuild it and build these bombs in it. So there were some kind of interesting things there happened, too. But that was, you know, in thinking about it, before they got done with it, I imagine they'd have been ahead to build them a new plant, because mm-hmm. it had lots of things in it that were just super exotic, but on the other hand, they didn't work at that time. And but they did have the shell, and I don't know whatever happened to that and whether they ever built them or not.
So what were your specific things that you did?
Well, the main thing that we did, we had civilian employees that would, you know, be, if we needed to inspect something or needed to see that was it. I would say the main thing was push paper. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it was. It's about anything you can say.
And was there a base there that you lived on?
No.
No. Where did you...
My wife and I, we rented a place.
Okay.
I mean, it was just housing in town, whatever. Because mm-hmm. there was no military there, except what few were in the... At Mishawaka, we had a commander that was supposedly from Buell Ord that was in charge of the overall project. Mm-hmm. And then... I had a lieutenant at that time, and I was an ensign that looked after the civil or the construction part of it. Mm-hmm. And what we did, in the whole project, what they did, they had plans and specifications drawn up by an architect engineer, and then as it got down the road, well, then they authorized this project for bid, and we had a general contractor that bid it, and he was building it, and that's where it was when I left. They were, well, we had the building up pretty good, and had a few hairy details that were interesting, but that's...
In building the building?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was that I assume that they went ahead and, well, they had to got it dedicated because they built Talos missiles there, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you there?
I was there 9 months.
9 months.
See,
okay.
I was in for 3 years, and I was 9 months there, 9 months up at Decatur, and 18 at Great Lakes.
Okay.
So that was what I did.
Okay, so after that, you went back to Great Lakes?
No.
No.
No, that was the end of it. That was
June. Okay.
In other words, 18 in Great Lakes got me through a year and a half, and then three quarters of a year at Mishawaka, three quarters at Decatur, and then I was home.
Okay.
Back at school.
Okay, and you mentioned schooling. What you said you were getting a master's degree.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what were you getting a master's in?
Irrigation engineering.
Okay, for your life out here.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of threw it away in a way, but I don't think so. I played with it down on the river anyway.
Mm-hmm. But you enlisted. Why did you choose to enlist?
Well, we can say what we want to, and I don't know it needs to be all here, but you know, I was subject to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought if I could get an education, I could do better. I could do better for the government by what I might know. And so that was mm-hmm. why I thought it was a good idea.
And you enlisted here in Kansas? Or
no.
No, in Colorado?
Colorado.
Okay.
That was where I was.
And where did you go to basic training?
We went to Newport, Rhode Island.
And what was that like?
Cold. No, it was a short course. The regular Navy ship going people, they spent 4 months, I think, in that training, and we had 2 months of it.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was more for specialized groups, and I don't remember how many we had. We had 32 civil engineers in the group, and I think we had probably close to 150. So there were people that were specialties in mathematics or in accounting and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So had your college experience helped you when you went into this basic training?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it didn't. There were quite a number of them in the class that had been in the Navy before and had gotten a degree or something, and then they qualified to go for a commission,
mm-hmm.
and they did. And I was one that didn't have the military presence and all that, which you learn, but
mm-hmm.
It's like any education you get.
And why did you choose to go to Colorado to college?
That's interesting, and you'd probably know about this. Did you ever hear of the Mitchells that live South Ingalls?
No, I don't think so, but I might as you're telling this
Walter
story.
And Cleo.
Oh, I think I do now with those names.
Yeah, well, actually, Their son, Elwin, played on the basketball team. Their daughter, Georgia Lee, and then they had a daughter, Joanne, that was two years younger than I was. And so they left Ingalls long about the late 40s. And, I guess they left in the middle 40s because they moved to Scott City by the middle 40s. And then they moved on up to Fort Collins. And the tie-in with the Mitchells and us was that my mother came to Ensign, Kansas to teach school in 1923.
Mm-hmm.
And she got a job at Ensign in the middle of the term. And So Cleo was a teacher down there, and they became good friends. And Mom nailed my dad then in 23, and Cleo Henderson was her name, and you maybe remember the Hendersons down there.
Mm-hmm.
My Grandpa Henderson, he was quite a guy. And Walt Mitchell was in the area, and Cleo was in the area, so they got married. So Mom and Cleo became, well, they kept on their friendship because mm-hmm. she was Aunt Cleo to me, and Bob and all the kids had Aunt Barbara McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how. And then it just happened that Bob was a year younger than me, and so I became his roommate at their house, and mm-hmm. that's how I went up there. Actually, I didn't spend my whole college up there. I came to JUCO over here, and I got out in 48 here, and then I went to Colorado Aggies. And
so the Dodge City Junior College, is that old?
What?
The college, the junior college, is that old?
Well, I don't know. It was running in the 30s,
okay.
The late 30s.
Okay.
Did you know Lyle Davis?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
He went to JUCO over here.
Okay.
So.
All right, but why Colorado? Because the Mitchell boy went to Colorado? Or
basically. I mean, it was, there wasn't any, well, it just seemed okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we went.
And that was after World War II?
Yeah.
Okay, so were you were undoubtedly aware of World War II as it was going on and knew people that...
Tell me about it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you know people that went, men that went?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I pushed to get the memorial built.
Mm-hmm.
I had a heck of a respect for them.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I think of it, I think of... I guess the first one goes to mind, and I didn't know him very well at all, is Robert Darnell, who was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And my first push was to try to get the names of the people lost in World War II. Well, not just World War II, World War I. We
right.
had two, I think, or I don't know if we have any more, that get them recognized some way. And
mm-hmm.
we ended up, after I was a commissioner, we have a plaque out in the fair building. I don't know if you ever saw it or not.
I think I have.
And it has the names of most of the ones that were lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, but I thought of all of them. And, yeah, and another thing, of course, you got time, I guess. Okay.
Sure.
But, in our school, Cimarron at that time, our band started in 1936.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the third grade. And the only reason the third graders got in the band is because the...
I might close this door. If that's okay. Okay, so third graders got in the band. What did you play?
I played a trombone.
Okay.
Teresa remembers me playing the trombone in the third grade.
Yeah.
But anyway, the only reason we got in was because the superintendent's daughter was in third grade.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that was a little of a crowbar over the music director. And the music director and the superintendent were both new in 36. So, as a result, I was in that band from 1936 to 1946. And, so when you're involved with the older kids, you actually associate with them a lot more than you do your group.
Because, right.
And so that was why I was tied, you might say, more to the older ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Harry Wallace Grant, I remember the day he was killed, you know, how that affected the school.
So how did you know that? Did they announce it?
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose somebody got a... It didn't announce it over school because we didn't have a loudspeaker in
right.
school.
Right, but when you got home or something.
Well, yeah, well, it was in school when we found out about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Harry Reager and, oh, there's quite a number. Wright, and of course, Pearl Harbor, that got Dwight Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
He was in my cousin's class, and he just tied close to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and like you say, you knew them better because...
I associated with the older kids more than I ever did my own class.
And in a small community...
Yeah, you knew everybody.
And when there were so many...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I take the Jacksonian still. I think the only column I read it is a news story from 1943,
right.
Now 70 years ago. But we didn't see what the war years were.
What was it like, though, being here? I mean, did you listen to the radio to find out about the events of the war?
Oh, yeah, you listen to what you could find, and then they had, of course, in the movies, they had the movie tone news or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and it was all, I won't say it was propaganda, but it was slanted properly for firing up everybody, but goodness sakes, it's so wonderful to think of how it all went together.
Mm-hmm. And how it really worked.
That's mm-hmm. the big thing, because mm-hmm. it's amazing to me that they could, well, when you just look out in our little communities, there's Garden City and Dodge City and Liberal and Pratt and Hayes, and all have airfields. Well, and they all came together at the same time, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
They get all that material in there and get it built and get it done. Granted, it wasn't all the best of construction in the sense of having all the amenities of life,
mm-hmm.
but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And, when the Barretts had a coal stove in the end of the building, and that was about it. Well, that was where you were.
Were there many more air bases out here in this part of the country than on the east or west coast?
I have no idea. It seems like every time you go anywhere, you find an air base or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to mobilize as fast as the United States did.
And how they got it done is just miraculous to
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
When the veterans started coming home from the war,
uh-huh.
were you aware that they, were coming home and trying to pick up their life?
And some were, well, case in point, Galen Truax, he was injured in North Africa, and he never did get over it.
Mm-hmm.
They shot up his arm, and I don't know what all else, and so it had effects on some. I don't know that I ever remember anybody, well, who knows, that really was had mental problems as a result of it. I'm sure it affected them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, it seems when I was interviewing them, they just said that they didn't talk about it, they just put their war experience behind them.
Yeah, a lot
mm-hmm.
of them did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was done, it's gone, and,
mm-hmm.
and then some of them poured out pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one Vietnam veteran I knew, I'm sure his experiences were quite excessive, but that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
When he got into the jungle and he cut a head off of a foot diameter snake, I had to think about that a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he did. That's fine.
Well, I've heard that those giant snakes just sort of stood up and well, war. I mean, the experience of war is not. It can't be pretty.
No,
for anyone.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's right as far as what the media is concerned and what the entertainment field is concerned. Of course, the entertainment field is to make it spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... but they'd like to sweep under the rug the horrible details in order mm-hmm. to
well,
make it so it isn't so gory yeah. for people.
I mean, there's, you know, basically yeah. when you go into action, you're trained to kill.
Yeah.
And then, but in a sense, you were, I don't want to say lucky, but you were supporting all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was lucky. I'm first to admit that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you stop and think about it, probably 60-70% was support. When you think about the Signal Corps, you think about all the supply stuff and all that. And,
mm-hmm.
and at that time, why the, and I guess even still, the bulk of the ships are running on fuel, oil, and that kind of stuff. But when you think about just the logistics of getting stuff there,
I know.
It's fantastic because mm-hmm. when you think of how much fuel those planes took, and they put thousands of them up over the air,
mm-hmm.
and they had to get gas that had to come from somewhere.
Right. Now, so when you were at Great Lakes, you said that you were there the 18 months.
Yeah.
What specific things did you do there?
Oh, my main things I was playing with was, by that time, of course, the reserve was a pretty big item in a lot of places. And after World War II, of course, the Quonset Hut was developed and became a pretty big item. And so at an awful lot of cities in the 9th Naval District, a Navy Reserve unit would be organized.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, most of them at that time, they were changing when I was there to make some permanent good ones. But most of them had been built on donated land, which was probably a swamp or a park where the soil wasn't all that secure at all. And then they'd get that piece of land, and then we'd have a Quonset hut system, maybe two or three Quonset huts, and they would tie those together with a passageway of some kind, and, I mean, just, you know, covered
mm-hmm.
covered hallways. And they'd get them built, and that was their, that was the facility they had. Well, by the middle, they built all them. They started them, I think, about in the later 40s. And by the time we got into the 50s, in the 53 and 54, why, some of those slabs they built those Quonset huts on had settled a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them weren't holding too good. And then, of course, they were a little bit higher maintenance requirement deal, and they had to be painted. So contracts to paint those buildings and keep up the whole plant, and the purpose of public works was to just be the city engineer. I mean, just look at any of the big bases; they have all the facilities of city engineer, and so you just had to keep it up like keeping the city up if you could.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. And then it all became a matter of, you know, everybody had their needs and their desires, and everybody threw their needs and desires in the hopper. And then when it came time to budget to come out, then you saw whether you got allocated or not.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about those Quonset huts. It seemed when I were growing up that farmers would buy these Quonset huts and put them up. Is
oh,
that
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah. We call them Quonset huts. I think I don't remember seeing any before World War II,
mm-hmm.
but I think it was something that was developed in the war that was a good, they're better than a temporary building. I mean,
yeah.
they're, and,
a good design, I guess.
Yeah, a good design because mm-hmm. they had a circular top, and that would hold up quite a bit of weight.
Mm-hmm.
It still had distributed it out. You didn't have to have a bunch of rafters and stuff up above. It just
mm-hmm.
And I know I have. We call them round tops too, whatever. And they're built by quite a few companies now. And they're an economical way to get a building built. And when you get it in metal, that's pretty permanent.
Right.
You can keep that pretty good.
So during that 18 months, you had different projects that you were working on all the time.
Yeah. And we had a whole design group in that district public works office that would actually, Glenview Naval Air Station. Maybe they had a bunch of quarters that had been built in the 40s, and maybe some of the porches were given out.
Mm-hmm.
So they would draw up a set of plans to redo the porches. And so they'd draw the plans, and then we basically, in the contracts, would set up the contract, and then they'd go out and try to get it done. And they had another branch in there, too, called Resident Officers in Charge of Construction. And if it was a pretty big place, or even in Great Lakes, I was attached to one of them that went up to Milwaukee. We were building the Naval Reserve facility up there, and it was a pretty plush thing with that time. It was all brick and all this good stuff. And it was run out of Great Lakes, but I know the civilian guy that was, I mean, he knew what he was doing. I didn't know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of along for the ride, but I was there in order to be official, so to speak. I mean, I knew what was going on.
Right.
But he'd been in it for probably 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew when he went out to deal with a contractor to see if he was doing it right, that was right or that wasn't right. And so that was something I learned about.
That's probably a learning experience
It was a very learning experience. Mm-hmm. That's why it was very, very rewarding for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was why.
And what other skills do you think you learned that then helped you once you got out?
This one did help me when I got out, but I'll tell you about it. I learned about politics.
Okay. What did you learn?
What did I learn? Okay, I learned that at Mishawaka, when they had decided they were going to build the plant down there, and they had the land for it, and Strauss, F.M. Strauss, I think it was the architect engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a politician, and he knew people in Washington, and he knew people all over. And he was up high in the architectural and engineering hierarchy in Indiana. He was on the engineering board and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they just happened to turn the first shovel of dirt for that plant on the Navy Notre Dame football game day. Now, I'll see where I'm coming from.
Uh-huh.
It just happened on, they had the Navy Notre Dame football game in South Bend, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the day after the opening, the turning of the ground or whatever. But old Strauss had rented one of the big hotels in South Bend is a hospitality house.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the admirals were out from Washington and all that type of thing went on. And so that was the way it was done. And I know my lieutenant boss, it rankled him the wrong way, but all he could do was sit and stew, and he wasn't diplomatic enough to get along with him too well. He would raise a big fuss about something that was being constructed wrong and all that. Well, okay, but anyway, the way it all turned out, why Solid Construction, which got the job, Well, I'll back up just. I'm just taking a lot of your time.
No, that's good. I'm here. That's what
You're getting an education.
I am.
Yeah, but anyway, Sollitt was who got the job. I'm not so sure it wasn't made up that Sollitt had the job before the bids were even open.
Mm-hmm.
But this job was one of the big things that was out at that time was tilt-up air construction. I don't know if you know tilt-up construction or not.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, we have it a lot today, quite a bit. But you take it, pour a slab, maybe it's a wall, but you pour it flat and you tilt it up.
Oh.
And you put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a reinforced concrete wall or whatever, beam or anything. And by using pretensioning, in other words, you stretch those steel wires, so to speak. I mean, you know what reinforcing bar is,
mm-hmm.
okay. But in other words, you get into this and you get into wires that are that. But you pre-stress them, you put stress on there before it ever stress on the wire,
mm-hmm.
and then pour the concrete, okay.
Oh, okay.
So when the concrete sets, then you cut the wires loose at the end,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got that much pressure on your concrete to hold it together tighter,
mm-hmm.
and it's a good tool.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta know how to use it, but it's a good tool. In fact, the shop we got up at the in the county is that, and I don't mm-hmm. know if you ever noticed out west of town, but Warner's, when they built that shop they had out there, which is a real nice shop,
mm-hmm.
that's pre-stressed concrete.
Okay.
And it can be used and it can be done very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
But we were at the beginning of it with this project, kind of. And very few contractors did it. Well, the reason that we did it, I think, the Navy up above did it was... It's a new concept, it's good, it's sharp, it has all this. Well, when you get down with the nut and bolts people, I don't know how to do that. Well, we got the contract written. I mean, we got the plans in, and they were to have the pre-stressed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was all well and good. They bidded. And I don't think they didn't even hardly open the bids. And Sollitt came in and said, well, we can do that, but we can do it this way, and we'll save you some money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Politics? Yeah. So they did it, and they wanted to go to brick and block, like customary construction. Okay, that was okay. Well, then we had to go back to Strauss and get it redesigned, because... Mm-hmm. We were using something different than the design. Well, of course, that cost somebody something,
mm-hmm.
and you know who it was. Well, anyway, got that done, and then it ended up, well, when we got through with that, we had to have a little bigger footings than we were planning on,
because mm-hmm.
we were going to hold a little more weight up there. Okay, that was all well and good. So they got to laying up the brick and block, and... I never will forget when the lieutenant came in. He was just stomping like heck because they were putting they put a sill across the top of the window, like across there.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got to putting some bricks up on top of that, the original design hadn't called for that, for a big enough beam to hold it. Well, the windows were going out.
Oh, my.
And so then they had to come inside and they had to put some anchors and props in to straighten the walls up. Okay. But, you know, all the change orders by the time we got through were something mm-hmm. else. But Sollitt got the job and that was the way it was.
And the lieutenant probably spent a lot of energy being upset.
Yeah, he did. It didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. Although I learned one other thing of that, which was not... This it bothered me for quite a little while. I mean, it didn't really bother me, but it bothered two of us quite a bit. And there was a young guy in there that in order to do the job, Sollitt was supposed to furnish, not Sollitt, Strauss, the architect. Mm-hmm. He's the one that's bird on, looking after it. Okay, he's looking after it. Okay, so he needed to furnish a full-time inspector. And this full-time inspector was, of course, out there being sure that they did this and they did that and they did this and they did that. He was about my age, and so we got to be pretty good friends. And he said one day, "Well, would you and your wife want to come over and see me and my wife?" "Sure, we'd do that, do that." We went over there, and he says, "You know, there's something I've got to tell you." I said, "What's that?" Well, he was studying to be an architect. Mm-hmm. Ab Strauss, who owned our Strauss company, he was the main guy on the architectural board that would, down the road, approve him getting his architect license. And he said, "You know, last year I worked for Sollitt, and I'm still working for Sollitt. Mm-hmm. But here, Strauss was paying him to inspect the job for the Navy. And that bothered him, but I can see why it did."
Right.
Bless his heart, he was trying to be as fair as he could. I know he was. Mm-hmm. But when I say politics,
yeah,
it goes on. And it kind of teaches you to think about politics a little bit.
Maybe teaches you how to maneuver in the world anyway when you get
It teaches you how the world's maneuvering.
Well, that's true, probably, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You just need to try to protect yourself mm-hmm. a little bit.
So your wife then, wherever you were, she moved.
Yeah, we moved. She moved up to, when I first got out of OCS, you might say, we had a 2-month course in Port Hueneme, California. Mm-hmm. And so she moved up, we went out there for 2 months. And
what was that for?
It was to get us acquainted with how the Civil Engineer Corps worked.
Okay.
I should put this in, because I happened to get chosen for Civil Engineer Corps contract type stuff. But that's also the CB branch of the Navy.
Oh.
In other words, there were Navy battalions.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of us went to that school, because mm-hmm. that taught them when they were going out as CBs where they were going. And I think that one of the big projects when I was at that time was Subic Bay in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one or two of the guys in my group went out there. And I guess that was quite a development before they got done mm-hmm. with that thing. That was a big deal, which I think they've given to the Philippines.
Well, it sounds like you did a variety of things.
I think I did quite a few things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't just like sitting at a desk and poking a typewriter.
So did you ask for certain things to do, or you were just assigned?
I got assigned. I think maybe I had a choice between construction battalion and contracts mm-hmm. or something like that. Not contracts, just public works.
Mm-hmm. And you think, you know that what you had done in college helped you.
Well, it helped quite a lot, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, it had to,
mm-hmm.
especially when you stop to think about that. College was a lot different then than it was now,
mm-hmm.
because when I only went to Colorado A&M for 4 quarters, and I was out.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I had a few hours built up other places.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the bulk of the people in college at that time were veterans that were back.
From the war.
Yeah. Yeah. They were probably out of our class. Probably 50 to 75% were veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And you get an education just talking to those guys and being with them and see how their life is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that you were fairly unusual to go to college at that time. Were there many others in the community that went to college also?
Oh, quite a few did.
Really?
Yeah, I think. I'd have to stop and think. I don't know, but if you wanted to go to college, you went to college, mm-hmm. just like my roommate up at Fort Collins. He went on and got his degree. Mm-hmm. I think.
So why did you want to go?
To college?
Mm-hmm.
I always was interested in civil engineering.
Okay.
I thought maybe I would play civil engineer someday, but
mm-hmm.
I guess I was too homesick and too ingrained in the ranch to want to leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And probably money-wise, I would have done better or lived better. I don't know, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know that I did.
Well,
I lived like I wanted to.
Right. That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was going to ask you another question. What's gone out of my mind?
Yeah.
So you did a variety of things, learned a variety of things also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when you look back at those 2 years, approximately three years.
3 years.
3 years. Are there incidents or specific people that you remember and, you know, that's...
Well, the whole thing goes together with a lot of wonderful memories,
mm-hmm.
and well, it just crossed my mind, which is not a memory at all. But when we were at Great Lakes, why I had a quartet in the Civil War in the Ninth Naval Office, and we sang at the Christmas parties and stuff.
Oh,
I mean, that was a...
Well, you must have musical talent if you played the trombone. And...
Yeah, that's fun. I mean, it was fun, and of course you have some interesting things. We had a... Are you familiar with quartets?
Mm-hmm. Well, sort of.
Sort of. And your lead singer is usually your second tenor.
Okay.
He always sings the melody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We had a unique second tenor. Once he... His wife worked with him an awful lot, thank
mm-hmm.
goodness. But once he got a melody, he had it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't get him started on the right note,
you
were in big trouble, because he could be down a half a tone, or he mm-hmm. could be down a third of a tone. And we'd get ready to sing it. We had a pitch pipe, and we'd say, "Oh, oh." And he goes, oh. I mean, that's one of the things I remember pretty well about it.
So you basically then would sing for?
Oh, like the Christmas parties and that kind of stuff. We weren't out doing singing for anybody else. It was just our own fun.
Okay, so did you have a good time when you were in the service?
Basically, I did. I have had one problem, if you want to call it a problem. I never have drunk. I'm not a drinker at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't criticize people for it, but it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me feel kind of antisocial,
mm-hmm.
which, be that good or bad, I don't know, but that's me.
Probably in the long run, it's for the better.
Huh?
Yeah.
And as I get older, I'm glad I don't, because I see too many alcoholics that,
mm-hmm.
And I saw that when I was there too, because old Asma's wife at the Christmas party, she was after Captain Shade. She chased him around that place quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think finally somebody got him to take his wife home, get out of there. That's sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but you must be a careful observer of what's going on around you and what you do, don't you think?
I try to be, let's
mm-hmm.
put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've learned about me a bit.
Yeah. So did you have brothers and sisters?
No.
No, you were an only child?
I'm the only one.
Okay, so when you came home...
I was there.
Okay.
And there was, I mean... What Dad would have done with the place, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm kind of in that spot now. What the girls want to do with the place, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And time will tell, and it may be, maybe it won't run at all, who knows?
Well, you don't know, though.
You don't know.
So you only have girls, then?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, girls can be ranchers, too.
Oh, they can, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sarah's a sharp person, but her health isn't very good.
Oh.
So that's a disadvantage.
I liked working with her. I did a lot of research at the library when I was writing my family history and got to know her.
Did you? Pretty well.
Yeah. And at that time, she had, was it West Nile virus?
Yeah, she had West Nile.
And she wasn't well then because of
just,
that.
Just last week, she was doing pretty good. And she said, well, I think I probably overdid it. Cleaned the bird cage and did this and did this.
Oh, that's right. I remember that bird.
And then I had a rash.
Oh.
It came back on. And, I mean, even yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And the only way she's making it go is to just take it easy if she can.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember then she was so determined that she would come in and, spend an hour or two, and then she just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
It's not the same bird that she has, is it? I can't remember the bird's name, but she had it in a cage in the library.
Yeah, it was a cockatiel.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if it's the same one. They ended up getting two. I mean, she ended up getting a partner for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd have left it in the library, but Candy is allergic to birds. So the bird came home.
Right.
Well, the pair came home.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought she had two males. But then one day, one of them laid an egg.
Okay.
And, I think the female died, and so she's got one bird dead.
Mm-hmm.
She's got one bird and I think seven cats.
Oh my gosh.
And I've got one dog. That's what we got.
So when you came home, was it, you just moved right back into ranching and...
Yeah, more or less. In other words, in the meantime, of course, I was gone for 3 years.
Right.
I was married all that time. Well, we got married just before I went in the Navy. Oh, probably 6 months. But anyway, then the folks bought a house in town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they were developing to live there. And then when I got home, I was going out in the country.
Mm-hmm. But you're basically a rancher, not a farmer.
Well, that's right.
Okay.
I sure found that out when we bought insurance here a couple of years ago. The ranching premium is $1,000 a year more on a family than...
Why?
Than farming.
Because of the...
Why? Okay, why? I mean, it's why you can buy a flatbed pickup insurance on a pickup for $75 a year in liability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a regular box on the darn thing, it's $250 or $300 a year.
Yeah.
I guess it's in the figures. Mm-hmm. But
so you said something about when you started, it was going to be irrigation engineering.
Yeah. Well, I got the civil engineering degree.
Okay.
And then I went home, and I was still single then, and I was at home for a year, and then I went back to get the irrigation engineering
mm-hmm.
degree.
And was that because you were in western Kansas?
Well, more or less. It was partly, it was that, I think.
And is your ranch on the river?
We run 5 miles from Ingalls to Cimarron.
Oh.
You look across the river between Ingalls and Cimarron, and that big white barn's ours.
Okay. Well, the river is no longer there, is it?
Tell me about it.
I know. I think it's tragic.
Yeah, I think it is, too, because, see, we've got water rights for, I think it's 4,000 acre feet out of that river every year. We haven't run much lately.
Well, no.
And that was what we did. Actually, the folks, Dad and Grandpa started the ditch because, well, they lived in Colorado for a while, right around 1900. And, of course, they irrigated down the river up there. So they had that land down there, and they thought, well, we could irrigate that and help the pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened that ditch up in 36. And then over the years, well, we just developed it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we didn't develop it like we could have, but I'm kind of glad we didn't.
Right.
One reason you may not think of this, but that water's pretty salty when it gets down there. And in Colorado, the way they live with it, well, I'll tell you this little bit of information anyway. When I was in school, I remember reading in a textbook that the salt content at Pueblo was zero, and by the time you got down to Lamar, it was 2,000 parts per million.
Oh, my God!
It picked up that much.
Just from the soil? Or the rocks or something?
Well, that and a few other things.
Okay.
The way they get by with it, the way we were getting by with it, was that you take that salty water, but you can put it out over your land, and if you got enough water, it'll absorb a percent of what salt you got.
Oh.
And then, but then it got a water table underneath,
mm-hmm.
and then it all feeds into the water table, and that's what the next guy downstream gets.
Right.
Okay. So, in other words, we had areas in our pasture where the water stood, and it was salty. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would just look like salt in the draws. So, that's one thing that people with all this irrigation don't realize, the problem with the minerals that's out there that builds up. And with a sprinkler system, it's worse than a lot than what we did. What we did, we put on about 3 foot of water, and it
just
would just
let it run
soak on through, and well, it'd go on down into the gravel and come out down below.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why the water Hutchinson used to taste so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could you tell me what time it is? I don't want to keep you too long either.
No, I have all kinds of times. Okay. 10 after 11.
Okay. Well, I'd like to go a little bit further if...
Oh, that's fine.
Okay, they say just do it an hour, so you're not getting tired or anything.
Oh, no.
I
enjoy spilling my...
Okay, well, I want to ask about the death of the river, but also... You ran cattle all those years?
Yeah, that's kind of a sore spot. I'll probably lose it here for a minute.
Oh, well now, okay, if it...
That's okay, right? We've had that place 100 years.
100 years, okay.
In 2011. Then it was 12 came, I sold every cow I had. So it's the first year we had that cattle at our place for 100 years.
And when was that?
2 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
It was kind of hard.
And you...
I'm sorry.
No. Because I grew up in around Ingalls, and I think the history of Gray County is absolutely fascinating. But this is a piece of Gray County that I'm not aware of, the ranching, because it was farming all over there. So you sold the cattle because you just couldn't do it any longer, or?
Had no pasture, no feed.
Because of the drought?
We had overgrazed our pasture trying to keep them for about 2 or 3 years, and we'd abused the pasture pretty bad. And then in December, well, in 2011, I bought up, when we were buying corn stalks, we were buying straw.
Oh.
We had enough of our own alfalfa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much, but I have a little. And I had enough feed stored up when the calves were to start in February to get me to June.
Right.
And along about January, I says, well, what's going to happen when June comes?
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing
coming.
So we sold them.
Mm-hmm. So have you always had people to help you?
Oh, yeah. We always hired some help along, try to.
Okay.
And that's harder now than it was. And,
mm-hmm. Well, okay, so when you came back in 55,
yeah,
those were really dry years too, weren't
they? Yeah,
they
were. But that river never went dry until
the
70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that water was, that was a insurance.
Mm-hmm.
That pasture was insurance. Now, prior to 36, of course, 30s were real bad too.
Right.
And they really suffered in then. And, well, that granddad, he was a trader. And I'm sure they, there's always been a cow on it. But,
mm-hmm.
He would trade cattle back and forth, and he'd run cattle into the Flint Hills and do all that good
oh.
stuff. And so they managed to survive. But, yeah, Granddad, he was the trader, and he'd go out to all these cattle sales. I mean, there was little sales everywhere.
There was, in western Kansas?
Yeah. There was a little sale barn at Cimarron's. There was.
Oh, I think I remember that.
And I don't know where they all were,
mm-hmm.
but I know he'd take his car and his trailer and he'd go do that. And he was enough of a trader, he'd go around to people's farms and
mm-hmm.
give them $25 for that cow. Well, that's all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of like Allie Hughes. Money kind of helped with
yes.
him. And so that was, and Dad, he would stay at home, and he was the one that patched up the sick ones he brought home.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought home some pretty sorry looking things, but they managed pretty good, really. I mean, when you stop and think about it, they had to manage pretty good. And Mom had chickens, and they didn't milk much. I mean, they sold some cream and sold a little milk. And
so how did your, was it your granddad, your dad, or you that eventually accumulated all those acres? That's a lot of acres.
Well, they had accumulated it by the 30s, except for 110 acres that I bought.
Oh, my gosh.
So we had it all by that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Granddad, he was quite a trader.
So yeah. Where did he come from when he came out here?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story, too. He married my grandmother in, I think, South Mound, Kansas.
Okay.
And she had to be a wonderful soul. But anyway, she was having asthma troubles. And Granddad and his brother, Granddad was always kind of wanderlust. And they, I guess they went together and went out to Southeast Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And bought a place. And so Uncle John didn't want any part of that. So Grandpa had it then. And I don't know whether they took a lease on a homestead or whatever. But anyway, they left in 1904 with three kids in a covered wagon going to out to Colorado. And so they lived out on that place for a while, and they had a local school that actually, that school still had reunions until the late 50s anyway.
Well, now you said Southeast, so what
Stonington was a school.
Okay.
But that's, I can't tell you exactly where that is with respect to, I can't even think of the towns in there now. There are hardly any. It was south of, had to be south of, I think, Hawley, more
okay.
or less. And it was south of Hawley and down in there in the Two Buttes area and whatever.
And so then they decided to move then back to, or to Kansas?
Well, not quite that quick.
Okay.
Because as long as they had a school for the kids in the area, Grandma was satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
But when come time for high school, Grandma wasn't satisfied
oh.
there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So she talked Grandpa into selling the place and moving to Grenada.
Okay.
Grandpa bought a general store.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't care for the store too much, I don't think, but at least they were in high school. And education was a big item.
Right.
So, oh, I should do this. I'll be okay. But anyway, he wanted to get into the cow business, and so he traded the store. There was a guy by the name of George Howell here in Dodge City.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a wife by the name of Laura Howell.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of Laura Howell?
I don't think so. Tell me.
Laura Lockwood tells named after
her. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Is Howell that little elevator?
No.
No connection.
I don't think that had anything to do with it. But it was named after Laura.
Okay.
So anyway, they were friends of my grandparents forever. And so they bought the original 400 acres. And then just been ever since.
I mean, they expanded that a great deal from 400
acres. Oh, yeah. He did.
Mm-hmm.
He.
A lot of hard work.
They moved down here in 1911.
Oh, my gosh. They were out here when the people were still homesteading out here at that time.
Yeah, they were. Mm-hmm. And I know Grandma's piano, the finish was all crinkled on it because it had come down in the cattle car.
Oh, my gosh. So when you were growing up, did you hear a lot of stories from your dad and your grandpa that you remember about their life? And
oh, not too many, really.
No?
When you stop and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was ever said much about how hard it was.
Right.
They were always good in the church, and Grandpa and Dad both were very strong odd fellows,
mm-hmm.
Masons.
And were they politically involved in, like...
No, Grandpa. No. Grandpa was a commissioner one term,
mm-hmm.
And they got rid of it. That was in 1922, and he experienced the Pueblo flood.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you heard of the Pueblo.
Oh, I have, yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that was kind of interesting in that, I guess once a bridge started moving upstream, it took the bridges out on downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
Well, then you would have, as long as you've lived there, you would have seen some floods.
Oh, yeah. I saw 42, and I saw 51, and I saw 60.
Okay.
65 took our house.
Oh my gosh.
It wrecked it.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought a new house then and put it up on the hill. And I said, if it ever gets us up there, there's a lot of people going to be in trouble.
At this rate, it won't.
But you know, one interesting thing about that old house was that when they moved here from Colorado, it had the kitchen, which was the original cowboy shack of Doc Martin's.
Oh, my gosh.
It's made with full dimension lumber.
Yeah.
And we got part of it up there yet.
Oh, my gosh, that's historic.
Square nails and all that good
stuff. Yeah. Okay, now, see, I had a question. When I was growing up, we had relatives that lived in Lamar, Colorado.
Oh, did you?
Every time we would go out there, we would have to drive out and see the John Martin Dam.
Yeah.
When did they put that up? It must have been relatively new in the 50s and 60s.
It was. It was really put up in the late 40s. I know I had...
After the war.
I don't know if it made it. I think they was working on it. Well, they didn't do much on it during the war, that's for sure.
Okay.
But I know I had two classmates that were in school with me that went down and worked on that. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, it must have been because it was a big project or something.
Oh, it was.
It's sort of the death of the river for us. They started damming the water.
Well, let's face it. I don't care. There's only one place in the world where the people downstream get their water.
Where is that?
Israel. you laugh, but that you stop and think about it. That's the only reason, and the only reason they get it is because they're going to have enough force to get it.
That's right, yeah.
And we can't force Colorado to do it. Nobody else can. And the problem with all irrigation is there's usually about 10 times more developed than the water supply is adequate for.
I know.
And we're the same way. And I know I argued with the state engineer back in the 60s. I said, you're having these water rights out just like you can paper your house with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, the water isn't there. And Jerry Ripple, who was our soil conservationist at that time, said that if on the average, and I think he's probably pretty close to right, the average recharge over years for each acre is a quarter of an inch. Now, when you take somebody that's pumping out 2 acre feet, that's 24 times 4, that's 96 times more mm-hmm. water you're taking out than's getting back down there.
I know. Well, no.
And you know it.
Yeah, they're living with it now.
We're living with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We just put down a new well this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pumping pretty good. And how long will it last? Well, who knows?
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I notice when I come back, because I live in Wichita, is that so much of the land has really been taken out of farming and it's back into the grasses.
Well, that's your CRP, basically.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As long as Uncle Sapp keeps doing that, it's okay, but stops that free payment. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell what people do, because that's what I've thought about. Okay, we're back in the pasturing system, dry land, and the rent for land now is, I don't know, maybe you get $12 an acre out of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you get through the taxes and you got $12 an acre out of it, you're not even making a living off of 1,000 acres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know what to do with it.
Well, the other thing you've seen, though, is the value of the land.
How do they keep doing that?
I don't know. I have no idea. Oh. It's far beyond what I would have ever imagined.
I know. I have a cousin that's had some health problems, and we were discussing, and she said she'd deeded her land over to her kids, and they got it appraised. And she says, what do you think it went for? And I said, oh, probably $4,500 an acre. She says, yeah, and you know, Dad gave $39 an acre for that when he bought it.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You just wonder what the future will hold.
I don't know. We've got such a mess. I mean, not a mess. I guess you know I'm conservative. You could tell by how I talk.
Mm-hmm.
But this progressive liberal stuff is, everything's good for the group. Well, everything's good for the group, plus the elite on top. And the poor guy that's doing the working and earning it, he's kind of left out, and it's pretty discouraging.
I think it's been that way all the time, though.
It's been that way for quite a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's been working that way. Well, you've seen probably the email or whatever that starts out with, when it starts with the person and they have the revival and it gets all the way from where, and we're in the last stages of it now. You've seen that, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know, though. You know, out at my brother's place, they took me around and showed me all their sheds with all their machinery and stuff.
Yeah.
So they're not doing that badly.
Well, no, they haven't. But one thing you might think about, at least I've thought of this, is what percent of what they've been making over the last 40 years
mm-hmm.
is subsidy.
I know. Oh, we have an argument about it all. We couldn't argue this time because my sister-in-law wouldn't let us, but no. You're right. The farm payments, I think, are wrong.
Well, I think they are. I had an uncle that was a real strong Democrat, and he was always for everything handing out. Well, okay, but somebody hasn't been paying for it, they've just been borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
And when the end of it comes, why? Yeah. Who knows?
I'm going to turn this off because we're getting